Radio. Smilepolitely.com is the place to go for all things local. Arts, culture, food and drink, music, opinion, tech, and more. I'm Rebecca, and I'm joined today by Amy Williams, who's the Marketing and Outreach Coordinator for Rape Advocacy, Counseling, and Education Services here in Champaign-Urbana. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well.
Good. Thanks so much for joining me. And to get us started, can you tell me a little bit about the programs and services that RACES offers in the community?
RACES actually has such a wide array of services that I think a lot of people aren't aware of how much we're doing in town. One of our big ones is our 24-hour crisis hotline. So that is 24/7, 365 days a year, staffed mostly by our wonderful volunteers. And along with that, our other 24-hour service is medical advocacy, which is when we meet a survivor in the emergency room, usually when they're getting a rape kit done. And then we also, of course, have counseling. This is one of the more unique things about RACES, is we're one of the few places that has free long-term counseling. Most places either charge you a fee or they cut you off at a certain point. So at RACES, we know that the healing process can take a really long time, and so we don't cap our survivors when they're going through that process. On top of that, we have a really robust community education program. We last year served about 37,000 students in our 4-county service area. And then we also do legal advocacy and a lot of community events to try and raise awareness about sexual assault.
I imagine that for volunteers, this is pretty difficult work. Could you describe a little bit about what the training process is like for volunteers, particularly who work in the crisis hotline or work one-on-one with survivors?
We have a pretty intense training process. And I recognize it's a little scary for a lot of volunteers when they start, but I think it's very, very helpful. So ICASA, which is the Illinois Coalition Against Sexual Assault, is our governing body for the whole state, and they have a 40-hour training that they mandate for all volunteers at rape crisis centers. And this is a really comprehensive training. We start off with maybe just a history of the rape crisis movement, because it is so long and so rich. And then we also will talk about crisis intervention with adults, with children, with significant others. And we even have a section on self-care, because it's very difficult work. And we want to start off from the beginning, letting people know that they need to take care of themselves.
You mentioned one of the services that RACES provides has to do with community outreach and working with students. Could you describe a little bit about what kinds of educational experiences you provide to students?
We work with students K through 12, so it's a pretty big range.
Probably very different things.
Yeah, you might imagine that we're talking about different things with our first and second graders than we are when we get to high school. But it's really important to start talking to students when they're young, helping them learn that it's okay to set boundaries, it's okay to say no, and if something does happen to them, how they can reach out to a trusted adult. So we do believe that a lot of those younger student services are so important. But then we also do age-appropriate education all the way up through high school. And when we get to high school, we're talking more about what is consent and how you can have a healthy relationship. Of course, we also work a little bit with the university doing outreach and education events there, but the university has their own resources, so for the most part, we're sticking with K through 12.
Could you describe some of the common misconceptions that, in your experience, people tend to have about sexual assault, either young people, young students, or even adults?
One thing that we come up against pretty often is the idea of a perfect victim. This can even come from our volunteers who have an expectation of who they're going to be working with when they answer the hotline calls, but there is no such thing as a perfect victim or one reaction to sexual assault. A lot of times people have reactions that we don't expect. They can seem numb. They may not seem to be reacting at all. Some people are openly emotional and that'd be crying and anxiety attacks, but people often don't match what we expect when they're going through trauma. And that can make it very hard for people to react because they have difficulty grasping what trauma should look like. And so when a victim doesn't meet those expectations, sometimes we have issues with people saying that she's not a believable victim, that they don't believe what she's telling them has actually happened, or they feel like perhaps that person doesn't need counseling services or some of the other services we provide because they're not being openly emotional, so it's probably not really affecting them. So one of the most important things that we try and educate about is that there are a wide range of reactions after a sexual assault, and all of them are okay and don't have an expectation for how somebody should behave or what their next step should be. Some other misconceptions are about who's actually impacted by sexual assault. It is something that impacts people of all ages, all genders, and we do serve all ages and all genders because we do believe that's important to be a very inclusive organization.
So I want to follow up about what you were saying about this idea of the perfect victim. It sounds like in the way that you were framing that, that has a lot to do with how a volunteer might approach somebody who contacts your organization. Do you notice those same kind of patterns happening when you're interacting with people in the community as well?
We do find that there are a lot of misconceptions in the community about perfect victims. And I just discussed how that can look, how we expect people to react after a sexual assault. But that concept also comes back to how we think a sexual assault should happen for someone to actually be a victim. And we often encounter these really victim-blaming questions, such as, what were you wearing? What were you doing there? Well, why did you go home with that person? And questions like that make the victim responsible for her experience, his or her experience. And it's very important to recognize that the perpetrator is the only person who is responsible for a sexual assault. And so when you're working with survivors, you have to be careful about how you are framing questions for them and refrain from asking questions that do put responsibility on them.
So can you describe a little bit about the history of races in Champaign-Urbana?
Races has a really long history, and it's actually pretty incredible. Someone my age, there have always been these kinds of services in my community, and I can't really imagine a community without these services, but if you go back to just as recently as the early 70s, none of these services existed. There was no concept of what a rape crisis center would be, and in the early 1970s in Champaign County, several women got together who were survivors of sexual assault themselves, and they wanted to support other women that had been going through a similar experience as them. So they started Champaign County Women Against Rape, and they were originally an activist organization, but in 1974, they set up the crisis hotline, and it's the same crisis hotline that we have going today. So that's
Wow, that's incredible.
Right. And the organization has obviously evolved a lot over time. These days, we aren't just a resource for women. We were under the umbrella organization of a Women's Fund for a long time, but became a standalone rape crisis center again in 2009 under the name RACES, Rape Advocacy, Counseling, and Education Services. And our services have grown a lot over time. So from that original hotline that was 100% volunteer run, we now, of course, still have a mostly volunteer run hotline, but also the counseling services and all the services I talked about earlier.
Do you mind describing how you got involved in this kind of work?
I have been doing anti-violence work actually since I was a freshman in college. And it originally started off actually with the Vagina Monologues, which led into doing peer education through our Rape Education Center. And then so my degree is actually in biology, and I realized that I really wasn't having a great time doing biology. I was spending all my time volunteering.
People are so much more fun than science.
Right. So I was in the Relationship and Sexual Violence Prevention Center all the time, rather than going to my fancy lab job. So I decided to take a look at where my career was going, actually went to law school, and while in law school, I volunteered at a women's shelter for all 3 years. And I was doing mainly medical advocacy during that time, so with both survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. And then I also started doing orders of protection and more legal work. So this is something that I've been doing in different ways for a very long time. I'm very passionate about ending violence and creating a world free of oppression.
So could you talk a little bit about how races is sustained within the community, what its funding sources are, and how it is able to provide resources to people in the community?
Funding is such a tricky question right now. So like many rape crisis centers, we get most of our funding either from federal grants or from the state. Unfortunately, this year, we have not been getting our state funding. So we are looking at a shift in how we fund our services. In the past, we've been about 90% government funded in one way or another. That's obviously not going to be our future. We are moving towards reaching out to private donors, building some business partnerships in town so that we can have a more sustainable and diversified funding model. So we do rely pretty heavily at this point on our community being able to give us some of those donations and help support us so we can continue offering our services. Most of the services do come directly from staff. Counseling, legal advocacy, all of these costs are being able to have a person there with a survivor while they're going through these difficult processes.
Could you talk a little bit about how many people in Champaign-Urbana, even if it's just a ballpark number, have accessed the services at races since it began its crisis hotline, for instance, in 1974, its first iteration?
Oh, I don't think I could give you any statistics on how many people over 40 years mm-hmm. have been able to access the hotline, but thousands for sure. We've actually seen a large uptick in our services recently, which is wonderful because what it means is that people know that we're here. I don't think there's been an increase in the number of sexual assaults. I think what's happening is people are starting to realize that races is in this community and can be a resource for them. So that does mean we've been doing a lot more medical calls where we end up at the hospital with the survivor, as well as more hotline calls.
So going back to the issues of funding and specifically the state budget, obviously, you know, we're in an election year and issues concerning rape and sexual assault have loomed very large on the national media. Why do you think this issue has become so politicized? And what are the consequences for victims and survivors of sexual assault?
So we have seen a big push coming out of the White House, actually, to support survivors of sexual assault. And actually, the president released a statement just today about it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and as a country, these are the things that we need to be doing to support survivors. So that's actually very exciting, the It's On Us campaign, which has been partnering with universities, including the University of Illinois, to raise some awareness. So there's actually a lot of exciting stuff coming from the federal level. Of course, then we have the state level, where we have seen very little action, actually. The budget impasse has not just impacted sexual assault survivors and rape crisis centers. It impacts almost every social service agency in the state of Illinois. And what's happened is survivors and the people that these agencies serve have become abstractions to people in Springfield. They don't see the human face that we see every single day. So they don't see the impact that it's having on people who are losing access to life-saving services. And it's become politicized because there's so much money attached to it. Our funding is really just a drop in the bucket if you look at the entire Illinois budget. But there's so many other things tied up in it. And because it's an election year, people aren't willing to take the risk. It's just not a great time to be reaching out to your elected officials and being able to get something really done.
So, you addressed how different policies at the state and federal level have impacted people's access to services, specifically to do with the state budget in Illinois. But I guess I'm curious about a related question as well, which has to do with the presidential election and the way that rhetoric concerning sexual assault has been working on the national stage. I guess, do you think that rhetoric has effects on how people think about sexual assault, either survivors or people who are trying to learn and become educated about how to respond to sexual assault?
I do think that the rhetoric we hear on the national level and just in the media in general can have a very profound impact on the way people view sexual assault. Personally, my biggest concern is if someone is a survivor and they're hearing some of this rhetoric, they may not feel safe disclosing. They may not think that they're going to get support in their community because what they're hearing on a national level can be so negative and so victim-blaming.
What do you wish legislators knew about the kind of work that you do at RACES?
I just really wish that they could see what it looks like over time when someone heals. Because of the work we do and the nature of the services we offer, we are there with a survivor when they first get to the hospital. We see the immediate aftermath of a sexual assault. We see what somebody is when they're in crisis. And then if they stick with us through counseling, we also might see them for years going through that healing process. And it's really important to us that we are empowering survivors. They take control of their own healing process. We are only here to help them along that process. But it's not easy. It's not a quick fix. And you have to put the time in. And I think a lot of times we don't think about that process. And I really wish that our elected officials could see the difference it makes.
It strikes me, too, the way that you've described some of the work of RACES as being this long-term model of working with survivors. It's probably difficult in some ways to quantify what that looks like from the perspective of somebody who's trying to decide which dollar should be advocated towards which organization, if it is something that takes place over a number of years. Do you find that to be true?
I do think that's the case. You know, we can see what it looks like if you're doing a hospital call. You're in the hospital for 4 hours, the rape kit's completed, and then you're done. That's a really easy thing to quantify, but healing really can't be quantified. It looks different for every person, and a lot of times we see people taking a few steps back as they're moving forward. And so you have to be there through the whole process to really understand what that looks like. And we do have the issue of people think that counseling is counseling is counseling. And so if we're funding one counseling program over here, do we need to also be giving money to RACES? And the reality is sexual assault is such a complex issue that a lot of therapists and counselors are not prepared to help survivors, and they do refer to RACES because we have specialization.
I understand that you were just describing how the process of healing is very individuated, but I'm curious if there are sort of general principles that you think about when you're working with somebody over a number of years, or I should say volunteers at RACES think about when they're working with them for a number of years. For instance, like how does, you know, what does healing look like? Are there different kind of stages or phases that volunteers at RACES pay attention to when they're working with survivors?
Most of our volunteers are only working with survivors in the acute phase. So there's a really complicated rape trauma syndrome where you look at the different stages of reaction. I'm not actually a counselor personally, so I've got a vague grasp of what that means, but I don't know if I could give you a really solid answer there. But there is the acute response, which is what we see when people are calling the hotline the first few weeks after a sexual assault, where somebody's first starting to come to terms with what happened to them, maybe trying to put a label on what that actually means. And then there are a lot of symptoms moving forward that are very different from person to person, but some people develop intense anxiety and fear. Some people start to shut down. And again, it very individualized. But.
So I imagine that RACES works with a variety of services in the community on a number of occasions. And so could you describe what services related to the work that you do are still needed specifically in Champaign-Urbana? In other words, are there ways that you wish RACES would expand its own services, or are there related organizations that you think are missing from the current landscape within the community?
So as the outreach person, my first thoughts are always to all these outreach projects we could be doing, especially with special populations. One thing that I'm very passionate about is working with people with disabilities. People with disabilities are victimized at much higher rates than the general population. And so I want to make sure that we are reaching out to communities that specifically work with people with disabilities and that they know our services are here for them. And also maybe do some educational events in the community so they can recognize what some of the challenges are and what some of the risk factors are.
So, what's next for Races? Do you have events coming up, or are there things that you want to highlight about what the organization is going to be doing in the coming weeks and months, especially as it changes its funding model to a more private model, as you were mentioning a few minutes ago?
So today is the first day of Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which runs for all of April, and we are partnering with Parkland College and with the University of Illinois to put on a whole bunch of events for the month of April. The one that I would really like to highlight is Take Back the Night. This is our 37th annual Take Back the Night.
Wow. So, that's again, a long history.
Right. this is something that Races has been doing almost since the beginning of the organization. And the idea behind it is that we all deserve to feel safe everywhere we go. A lot of it goes back to the victim blaming I was discussing earlier, where we ask people, well, what were you doing that made this happen to you? And so the idea behind Take Back the Night is that people deserve safety. And so we do a march to raise awareness about sexual assault. And then at the end of the march, we gather and there is a speak out and we give survivors an opportunity to tell their story or say something that they just really need to say because there aren't a lot of outlets for them.
And when is that event going to take place? What are the details?
That is April 28th. The march starts at 7 p.m., so we are going to be meeting at Lincoln Square Mall and then marching from Lincoln Square Mall to campus, and the speak out is in Noise Lab.
Wonderful. And in our last minute or so, can you describe how people can find more information about Races?
Probably the best way to get more information about Races is to go to our website, and that is cu-races.org. And we are actually trying to expand our website now to include more information, not just on our services, but on other topics that are important. If you need to know how to help a friend, what bystander intervention looks like, all of that information is going to be up on our website very soon.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Amy, for joining me to talk about Races. You've been listening to Smile Quietly Radio. SmileQuietly.com is the place to go for all things local. Arts, culture, food and drink, music, opinion, tech, and more. Have a great weekend.